We have a basketball program that we all expect to compete in the Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in the Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
First, I need that national championship.
Welcome on in, everybody. Maddie here alongside Josh, Johnny, and Sam. And oh boy, these end of the season episodes never get any easier, do they? As our beloved Fighting Illini, unfortunately, of course, as you all know, fell to Houston the other day. We will get to all of that. I guess we didn't have the gumption to podcast after that. I mean, honestly, Johnny and I are the only professionals that actually stayed within this time zone for the duration of the tournament, with, you know, Josh and Sam leaving. Josh is giving me a mean look right now. Yeah, Johnny and I were the only ones who were willing to stay in the state of Illinois. But there's a lot to break down. So how about we start with the Curbelo transfer news. Came out about 5-6 hours ago. Maybe not super surprising, but still just as disappointing. And we can kind of work our way backwards from there.
Yeah, I mean, it just sucks. Today's a tough day. It's back-to-back years of just like gut punch, the end of March, early April, with obviously Loyola and then losing Miller, and then you lose all your assistant coaches, all that sort of stuff. Not fun. And it's not fun again to be back in the same place. And specifically Andre, he just had such a bright future, and it's so sad to see, to kind of end with a question mark and end with a what if of what if he didn't get hurt and what if he didn't have those concussions that screwed up his vision and he wasn't able to play, because there was just so much talent there. And he was a kid who just, I don't know, like, was such a joy to watch when it was working, and you could tell he was just like really happy to be there. And to see in a year for it all to kind of, I don't know, not end the way that you would have wanted, and be a really polarizing figure in between the fan base. You talk to so many people who, I don't know, were really frustrated with him, that it sucks for a guy who, I don't know, chose Illinois before we had even had any success. Like, he committed before that 2020 team was good. It's just a bummer to see.
When I first saw an Andre Curbelo highlight, and obviously this is when the staff was into him, I changed my Twitter bio to Andre Curbelo stan account right away. The staff was looking at other options at point guard, but with the Antigua connection to Curbelo, I kind of always had like a thought in my mind that it could be Andre Curbelo after Io. And I was just so confident that he was going to be such a successful player. And in his first year, everything that we thought about him came true and came to light. And exactly what you said, Johnny, with it's always like a what if, like, what if he didn't get that concussion? What if he wasn't the way that he just couldn't come back to 100%. And it's just so sad that we've have to see him leave in transfer portal. Johnny and I have been kind of tweeting our way through this announcement. And obviously it's been a very controversial topic on our Twitter feed, but it's just very sad to see him go. He was a player that I had more fun watching him. Obviously Io is up there, but I think I had more fun watching him his freshman year. And obviously it wasn't the same his sophomore year, but than any other player. He did things that we never saw in our 4 years when we were at school or since then. From before that, obviously we were little kids when Dee, Darren, Luther were on the team, but he did things that no other, like the one highlight I have a remember, like as a memory, is the like Ray Rice alley-oop in the Bragging Rights game. Like that's like the one highlight I can think of between those 15 years that was absolutely crazy. I really don't have another one. And Andre Curbelo,
yeah, there were a couple of Myers Leonard's dunks, but that's right. About it. Like,
right.
You didn't see the kind of highlight reel plays on display.
Night in, night out, Andre's delivering for you and like making your jaw drop and being like, what did he just do? And obviously later, last three games of the season, there's been more of like frustration in his play, but we can continue to talk about this, but that's, it's just a gut punch. No longer the Stan account. I'll always be a Stan.
Right. The boardroom was very much always pro Curbelo, even through his worst games, even through the frustrations of the concussion and injuries and you know, assist to turnover ratios not being what we'd like them to be. We were always very much so pro Curbelo, and we fought through a lot of haters. And I mean, I don't think anything says the polarization that Curbelo is with Zupke's tweet today. I think it had like 100 replies in the first couple hours about how he was basically our best player in that stretch in 2021 towards the end of the regular season, with Io being out. And I think that that is just the polarization of Curbelo.
Yeah. I mean, he was so good during that stretch. You got to rewatch some of those games, and we lose Io and we're freaking out, and he comes in and kind of was the alpha on that team. Obviously Kopi was amazing, but huge in the Michigan game, huge in the Wisconsin game. Then Io comes back for the Big Ten tournament. Like, you watch that Iowa game and just three steals, like 16 points, 6 for 7. Like, he was just a monster. And it's just crazy to see all that, all those flashes then not amounting to what would end up being like just an incredible classmate here. Like, I tweeted out, five guys who were on all freshman team last year, Dickinson, Zach Edey, and Curbelo. So it's like all of those guys, their sophomore years, they got even better. Three or two of those guys were All-Americans in Murray and Ivy. Dickinson was an All-American the year before and honestly better this year. And then Edey was second team all Big Ten. And that was his peer group. That was really who we expected year two Andre Curbelo to be, or potentially year three of him. Like, you saw it in so many different like past Illini rosters where it's okay, you have upperclassmen Frankie Williams, and then he passes the torch to Luther Head, who then passes it to Dean Dare, and you just kind of have the continued success year after year. And we were hoping it was going to be Io passes the torch to Curbelo and Miller, and now both of those guys are gone. And as much as we can expect the next class of freshmen, like, yeah, we're hoping we get Sky Clark, and yeah, we're hoping Jaden Epps ends up being really good, but if there was one guy who's really going to be the difference in next year being a rebuilding year or a top three in the Big Ten again, it was going to be Andre Curbelo. So processing all that is really tough.
Yeah, Johnny, I'm not ready to quite make those concessions on, and this has nothing to do with the level of player that he is himself. Mm-hmm. Of course, Curbelo is the difference, can be the difference between being, mm-hmm. you know, a double bye team in the Big Ten and, you know, essentially rebuilding. The transfer portal giveth, and I'm not quite ready to make that proclamation mm-hmm. until, you know, the roster is set.
Sure,
because Illinois is a high major team. They will attract transfers, they will attract talent, they will attract recruits, and I'd like to see what the freshmen look like. I'd like to see what the transfers look like. I'd like to see who's coming back. I'd like to see what the freshmen on the team now look like as sophomores. I'm definitely not quite ready to make that claim one way or another, but yes, regardless, a loss of a guy like Curbelo is absolutely going to impact your team. I think that obviously it doesn't take a big brain guy to know that, but I'm not sure here as we stand at the end of March with the entire transfer portal still to unveil itself that I could just, you know, say, all right, well, now it's a rebuilding year.
And that's totally fine. And I totally agree that we still have the ability to get impact transfer guards that would be a solid replacement, and they could be better. I think the point we were trying to make on Twitter today to the people that say Epps plus Sky Clark is better than third year Curbelo is just not a case that you can like back up with any facts. There are freshmen that are impactful for both Duke and UNC, not Kansas and not Nova. So two Final Four teams, and someone went back to last year's Jalen Suggs impact. Those are top 10, five players in recruiting class rankings. which are just totally different players. Those are lottery picks year in, year out. The top five, 10 players, they're lottery picks that they have, they're one and done. A top 30 player, I hope Sky Clark is the best player in the world. And a top 50 player, I hope Jaden Epps is the best player in the world. They're just not this. They're what, you don't believe me yet? I bet.
No, nice. Yeah.
They're not the same as a top 10 player. So yes, they're impactful, but the type of talent we're talking about is, it's so different.
Exactly. And Duke has like five stars across the board in their starting lineup. So it's like, yeah, Trevor Keels can be a good role player on that team, but it's a little different. And if they want to talk about like impactful freshman guards, probably you could argue that the best freshman guard Illinois has had the past 5 years was Andre Curbelo. Like, he was on that all freshman team. He was Big Ten Sixth Man of the Year. Like, Iowa was really good his freshman year. Trent was really good at their freshman year, but like, they were both on losing teams. And it's one thing to get some stats on a losing team, and it's another thing to be a really impact player on a winning team. And I would say Kofi was a Big Ten Freshman of the Year, but he was a center. It's like different to compare him. But Curbelo, like, what you are expecting, like, almost the best case scenario for a guy like Epps or a guy like Sky Clark is what Curbelo was as a freshman. So it's hard to really expect anything more than that. And I mean, we had good freshmen this year, and it's just, it's hard to get consistency on a really winning team. One thing I also want to talk about is just, I don't know, the emotional part of Curbelo, or the part that really divided his fan base. You have so many conversations with people, or you see people on Twitter who really seem to bash him and not like him. They thought he was out of control. They thought he was a turnover machine. And I'll give him the fact that, like, you look at Curbelo's stats this year, it wasn't good. The shooting percentages weren't great. He shot 35% and 20% from three. He turned the ball over. He wasn't great this year, but one, it really seemed like the injuries played a huge role. He just looked like a different guy from last year to this year. And it's just really hard for me as a fan to not root for a guy and not root for a guy to overcome their struggles, as opposed to say, I hate this guy. Like, we have friends who will go unnamed who say, I hate Curbelo, or I really don't like it when he's on the floor, which, as for a 20-year-old kid, I just don't understand how you can really say that, because this kid chose Illinois over so many other schools. He could have gone to, I don't know, he probably had 50 offers. When you're a top 50 player, you can go anywhere you want. And as a 20-year-old, as an 18-year-old, he picks Illinois, even though we didn't have a track record of success. So I don't know. It's hard for me to like wrap my mind around people who are like, I hate this guy. Josh and I, when we went to the Iowa game, we're getting in a fight with other fans about them complaining about Andre Curbelo. Like, all this dude wants to do is be on a winning team and contribute, and you're going to try to bring him down. It's one thing if it's okay, that was like Jalen Tate, and we get frustrated as he's on a team that isn't going to make the tournament, or Kipper's doing dumb things. But this is a guy who is, all he's done here is been on the two most winningest teams in the last 17 years. So really, you're going to continue to bag on him. And it's one thing too, it's like these pro players who you get mad at on the Cubs because they come in and they're inconsistent. It's just so different than a college kid who, like, he has 4 years of like the ability to be good and then go to the pros and like maximize his talent, and you're going to sit around and kind of bash the kid. So it's just, it really confuses me. And I hope, oftentimes when guys transfer, I'm kind of like, I don't like you, like, go away. For Andre, it's like, I get why it was such a difficult time and why you need a new place. And I don't know, I'm just going to root for him. Just please don't go to Ohio State with Zed Key. That's really my only request.
After all that.
Go somewhere where you can play. Don't like if you're going to leave us, we're very sad, but like, get your money's worth so we can root for you and be happy for you.
Yeah. Ideally, he goes somewhere is really good, and we're also really good, so everyone can be right and everyone can be like, look what could have happened if we had Curbelo, and also we can just be happy about still being good at basketball, because next year is such a question mark, and I guess we won't really know until all of the portaling plays out. But Sam, I'm interested in what your kind of reaction was. I know we didn't get to really hear your thoughts.
I mean, I think you said a lot of it. I just think in general, like, you brought in Brad Underwood. I think the things he's good at are building a culture, developing players, and like really knowing how to play to their strengths. So to me, like, the lack of continuity in general kind of makes me nervous. Like, our offense is going to look different next year. Andre stepped up in defense, which I think says a lot just like about his buy-in and culture, buy into the culture. So to kind of start fresh, that just creates one more question mark. I think it kind of creates a little more volatility, and it feels like there's not really that needle being thread through from this past era with a lot of experience to an era where you're going to be leaning on a lot of young guys like Luke, RJ, and freshmen like Jaden Epps and additional transfers who weren't previously here.
And don't get any of this wrong, where I think that Curbelo leaving is going to be a detriment to like what Underwood's going to do at Illinois. I loved Curbelo that much, and it's just sad to see him go. I do think all the players that you just listed are going to be an impactful player for our team next year, and we can still be very, very good. It obviously depends on who stays, Kofi, or who comes in to replace Kofi and Curbelo and Trent and Plummer and Monte. But it's just sad now, you know, like you want players to just, Johnny texted me this. It's just like, you want players to stay so long. You're going to be so connected to the player that stays for 2, 3, 4 years than the player that transfers in the fifth year. I loved Plummer. He was so impactful for us, but I'm obviously way more connected to Andre Curbelo than I am to Alfonso Plummer, you know?
Yeah. Like fifth year guard Trent Frazier and fifth year guard Plummer, like Plummer, a great guy, but like seeing the ups and the downs and then ultimately getting the redemption is, it's like what sports is about. It's what stories are about. So it's a bummer that we don't get to see the other side of that, because he really would have earned it. I mean, we've all had our own failures, and kind of being on the other side of those failures is where you're most proud of. And it's just, it's weird to think about the transferring. I don't know. I just harbor a way different feeling towards, say, Adam Miller transferring than I do Curbelo. Like when I think about Andre, thinking about his senior year of high school, he was just so good. He's beaten Sierra Canyon on national TV and just like the man, and everyone's excited for him. And then you come to Illinois after, I think he was like the New York State Player of the Year, and you're immediately on a top five team that's just rolling. And think about the guys in that locker room. You have Io, who's the clear alpha. You have like the best locker room guy ever in Georgie Bishanashvili. You have Trent to mentor you. You have DeMonte to mentor you. And everything is just going smooth. And at the same time, like, your roommate is Adam Miller, who's like also a freshman and also contributing. So everything was great other than COVID. But when things are rolling like that and you just get to be with your basketball team for so long, it's like these past 2 years, senior year of high school and this freshman year, are just awesome. And then you lose to Loyola, and then you have the health issues the next year. It's just like, it's understandable when you're like, wow, this is just, basketball at Illinois was so much fun, and then now it's just not the same. I understand why you would want to transfer. And one thing I always kind of think back to too is when the homecoming game against Wisconsin, they had that open practice, and we're talking to Tyler Cottingham, and he's talking about how, yeah, they had the open practice, no question. Bello's the best player on the floor, and Kofi was playing, and Trent's playing, and Plummer's playing, and everyone's like, yep, no question, Bello's the alpha. And then a couple weeks later, he gets that concussion against St. Francis, and I guess the rest is history. So I don't know, just it's been a whirlwind of a couple of years, and I can totally empathize with him for wanting to transfer. It sucks we don't get to see what he could have been and kind of stay on the same ride that we got to see with Trent and Io.
Yeah, it is certainly unfortunate the way in which things panned out. You know, you wonder if the decision for him to not play in the second half from Underwood was part of the decision, or how much the injuries, you know, factor into it. But ultimately, we will never know. And again, I think this is just how college basketball is now. The transfer portal giveth and taketh. I think your team is probably going to have a surprise transfer every single year moving forward, right? Obviously, last year was Adam Miller. This year was Curbelo. Maybe it wasn't a huge surprise, but I think that these types of things are going to happen moving forward. It doesn't make them any easier, but I think understanding that this is now the landscape of college basketball and college sports in general, and that this is unfortunately the new normal. But again, we should talk about other dudes, you know, in regards to staying or going, like Kofi, who we don't know if he is going to stay or is going to go. If you had told me that there was even an inkling of a chance this time last year that he'd stay for another year after this year, I would have absolutely laughed in your face. But again, I think with the NIL thing, that it's not completely out of the question for him to rack up a milli and for him to stay one more year. Again, I love Kofi. This podcast loves Kofi. But I think any real NBA scout or NBA guy will tell you that he's not exactly NBA first round or even second round grade at this point, at least the way in which his game is set up, and that he could fare from another year of college basketball in terms of what he stands to profit.
There's definitely that take of it where it's like, he's not a first or second round pick, but then there's the other side of it is like, what is he going, like, he knew exactly what he needed to do better to make the draft this year. And what did he do to change that mind? Like, what is he gonna learn in the next year that he didn't do this year?
Nothing. But it's just it's almost like the Luka Garza thing, where it's like, it doesn't, you at least you can somehow, I don't know, you can be a better basketball player. You can, instead of putting up 21 and 10, you can put up 24 and 12 or something, right? Or be the Big Ten player of the year, be the best player in the entire country, right? You are absolutely right. He's not going to get a mid-range game. He's not going to extend and guard stretch fours on defense next year. But it's in this precarious, his talent is in this precarious situation of, well, maybe not quite NBA talent, definitely Europe talent for sure. But with the NIL, if he can rack up enough money, maybe it makes sense for him to stick around another year.
It 100%. So it is a tough decision here. But he is 22, so he's not, obviously, like every other player, he's not getting older, but he's not getting younger. And like, this is the time where like, he's technically a senior age, like right now. So he'd be going year wise into his fifth year of what college, like he's plumber's age going into next year.
Yeah. He's actually, he's 2 weeks younger, or 2 weeks older than Jaren Jackson Jr., who's in his fourth year in the NBA.
Wow. That's a crazy stat.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's absurd.
But,
oh my goodness.
But the point remains though, like you can make a lot of money at Illinois. And honestly, like that's huge compared to potentially what you could be making in the G League. Maybe in the G League, you're making 100K, or if you're on 2-way, even it's like a few 100K, but like the Guardians might be able to hook it up and you could get a million. And you're talking about like charter flights, and you're talking about meals all paid for at Illinois versus, you're in the G League, you're taking buses, and you're, I don't know, not getting quite the same nutrition. And I don't know if upon reflecting on, maybe Kofi was working on things in the off season last year, but really needed more time. Like we've seen him in practice, he can shoot threes and make them. He can shoot a mid-range game, but it's all about getting more experience and confidence with that. So maybe he was a third of the way there, halfway there, and wants another off season to really practice things out. And why not have that practicing out ability at Illinois, where you're guaranteed to make money, and then kind of figure it out from there? It's definitely weird because, well, is he going to get the defensive experience he needs? Maybe not. Maybe that would be better for the G League, but there's a lot of pros at staying Illinois, and maybe he wants to undergo a bigger physical transformation, and the best guy to do that with would be Fletch. So I don't know. Like the some of the Curbelo stuff, there's a lot of questions that we don't have answers to, but the fact that it's even like a possibility to get a fourth year of Kofi and to return two-time All-American is insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think that's why we kind of have to wait and see where it
where it all pans out. But there are dudes that we are for sure losing, including guys like Plummer, Trent, DeMonte. And I do think we should spend the time sort of paying homage to those guys, right? Of Plummer was awesome this year. And I mean, there's nothing that I can say here on this podcast now that really encapsulates the time that Trent and DeMonte had on campus and for the basketball program, for the culture. But I do think it's important to sort of reflect on their impact on us as fans, but also on the team and the program as a whole.
There was a tweet that said, like, I need a dissertation on how a man from Wellington, Florida, spent 5 years at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. It doesn't make sense what Trent did. And the fact that we got him for 5 years is just beyond ridiculous. He is a fighting Illini. He did everything that we could have asked from him for 5 years. And it's really sad that his time is no longer at Illinois, but he earned every single praise, every single thing that he got at Illinois. He really went through the ups and the downs. He actually did start off like as an all Big Ten freshman, which is like, it was a bad team, but he led our team that year and then went through the tribulations of not being the alpha, not being the guy, but finding a new role. And it's been amazing just watching his career, and he will go down always as it's going to be tough to, if anyone can crack like a top three Illini that I got to watch, because Trent was all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It was our senior year of college, freshman year. We're sitting in Crush. He went down with like kind of like a minor injury. Stadium goes silent. It's very quiet. And I just yell out, "We love you, Trent." And I don't know why you guys like to just bring that up from time to time, or yell out, "We love you, Trent," or acknowledge that moment in our fandom. But I guess that's really just how it sums it up, is we love you, Trent.
Yeah, we love to bring it up too, because a few of us were sitting behind the bench, which was where we normally sat, but you were sitting behind the hoop that game. So you're like, we're like on opposite ends of the stadium, but then it gets quiet and we from the opposite end, we're like, "That was Maddie. You just said we love you, Trent." And it's one of Trent's first of many on the floor down.
Right.
And you're like hoping for his life that he's okay. Unfortunately, almost every time he steps up and gets back into action. But yeah, that was a great moment. And like with Trent and DeMonte, it's just like, how could you not, guys who are team guys? And we've all played on sports teams before. And if you don't end up making it to the college ranks, like at some point you've been a role player on a team, and you can just really understand what it's like to, I don't know, sacrifice for the greater good of the team. And in that way, Trent and DeMonte are so relatable, because they said, okay, I can't score as much, so I'll play better defense. I can't get as many shots, I'll try to set screens or pass. It's just those dudes are awesome.
Yeah, I remember DeMonte when he was a senior in high school. For some reason, I followed him on Snapchat, and he was like always awake at like 5 a.m., like screwing around in Peoria or something. And he turned out to be like the exact opposite of what I would have thought. Like, he was just like, I don't know. I can't explain it, but.
Yeah. I remember one Snapchat that you sent of his, and it was just like him with one of those animations where he looks like kind of like a police officer, and he just looks ridiculous. And Sam sends it to our group. It's like, this is the guy who's keeping John Gross employed right now. Like, we're like, this is ridiculous, but he ends up just being the consummate pro.
Yeah. The Maryland inbound play may have affirmed my initial suspicions, but then from there it was a pretty big 180.
And it really stinks, like the way that the last few games went, where, you know, their legs just caught up with them. They've been grinding for the last 5 years and couldn't hit the shots that they needed to win games to bring us to like a second weekend Sweet 16 or even further. But I don't think I would ever remember them as those last three games. You're going to remember the good times. They were on the worst possible Illinois basketball team, and then were key cogs on the two best in this decade in this like formal years of our fandom.
Yeah. And I mean, I was, I drove down for the game. I was in Pittsburgh sitting next to Robert, and the finality of it all just really hit when you see Trent walking off the court, basically being dragged off the courts by his teammates, and he's crying. It's just so emotional. It's so sad because the amount of blood, sweat, and tears that that guy put into our program, and to not see him make this Sweet 16, it just hurts a lot. And I guess we can kind of talk about that too. We all had different reactions to the game, but it's hard for me not to be proud of this team for all that they overcame. They were clearly a flawed team with, I mean, the amount of injuries. I think we had 10 or 11 guys make a starting, like, start for this team. So it was just like there was a lack of consistency, but they just found a way, and they found a way to get a Big Ten title. And unfortunately, they didn't get to make it to the Sweet 16, which was everyone's goal. But still just proud of those guys, but equally sad that we are closing the book on Trent and DeMonte's career and saying they didn't make the Sweet 16.
I have a question. This is not, I'm getting off track here, but Johnny, you talking about Trent's final game kind of reminded me of Nicky Allegretti's final game at Northwestern, which we were at. Maddie, mm-hmm. didn't you scream, "We love you, Nicky," as he was walking off the field for that too?
Did I? It sounds like something I would do.
I think it was like on video.
Maybe for Tabell. It sounds like something I would do, but I think the comparison is there, right? Where you come in a challenging time, and obviously Illinois basketball is in a much better place than, you know, Nick Allegretti maybe left Illinois football. But the comparison is there, just a culture guy that's also really good. Allegretti obviously playing in the NFL. Trent will hopefully get some a look somewhere professionally. But I think that the comparison there of just dudes who worked their tails off for 5 years, the culture and the comparison is there.
Yeah. And I mean, it also gave me perspective too, Sam, to when the three of us went to the Illinois Iowa Big Ten tournament game, which was Aaron Jordan's last game, and kind of seeing him walk off the court. And honestly, there weren't a ton of guys around him putting their arms around him being like, "This is so sad. This is your last game. And this is what our culture is about." Like it was very fortunate to see the difference in, I don't know, the guys around Trent, and just you could see the difference in our program in a few years of having Underwood as our coach. But it's still jarring every time you see a college athlete walk off the field for the last time.
Oh, man. Yeah, that picture with Whitman of Trent and Whitman just embracing. Like I spent a couple minutes just looking at that photo, right, of Trent just looking like a little kid, right? Just hugging Whitman there in tears of just, like you said, the finality of it all. And I think these last couple of years, if there's anything that I've learned as about the tournament in college basketball, it is so goddamn brutal, this tournament, right? You know, as an Illinois fan for only what, 7+ years, and now only seeing my team in the tournament for the last two. Man, it's a brutal tournament. It really, really, really only rewards one of 68 teams' fans and anyone who doesn't have a team in it that likes to be entertained. Everyone else gets their heart ripped out of their guts. I mean, you even take St. Peter's. Like, obviously, those dudes are so stoked that they made it to the Elite Eight, but, like, they're still feeling so gutted, so dejected, even though they made it further than any 15 seed, right? Even all these, the Final Four teams, the three teams that aren't going to win at all, they made it to the Final Four, yet they're going to be absolutely dejected out of their minds. It's just a brutal, brutal tournament that ends poorly for 99% of the players.
Yeah, it's designed for chaos. And it's such a bummer, though, because we would have been so sad whenever this team ultimately lost. But had they made the Sweet 16, I feel like you could have been like, We hit all of our season goals, which was win a Big Ten championship and make the Sweet 16, and you were one game away. And that's why, for me, after that loss, that drive home, I was processing and realizing I'm still grieving Loyola, and that one is still haunting me, and I'll never get over that. Because when you have Io and you have Kofi, and you just have one of the best Illinois teams ever, and we couldn't make it out of the round of 32. And that was just like our opportunity that we missed. And it just sucks. Like the Houston game was frustrating. It almost felt like Houston was the better team, and we can get into the seeding and all that, but I'll still just never get over Loyola. If you win that game, you're playing a 12 seed Oregon State. And I don't know, you had so many guys on that team. You just had your worst game of the season at the wrong time. And it's stunning still. I still can't get over it.
Okay, I'm going to go a little bit further into the Houston game. We had our gut reactions that we texted to each other. I guess it was the next day, but there were some disagreements about it. And from the start, I'll say that it sucks. It obviously sucks. And I didn't view, like, I'm obviously viewing not making the Sweet 16 I'm viewing not making the Sweet 16 as a failure. We didn't achieve our goal. But I wasn't as sad as I was against the Loyola one, as the Loyola one. I think, in my opinion, we haven't played good basketball since like the end of February. The Iowa game was like a very like scary game. We had the ups and downs of like winning a Big Ten championship, but also like we didn't have a complete game from like the whole end of the season. We all in the back of our minds had this thought, like, we haven't seen it put together yet whatsoever. And like, you're always like, all right, once we get it put together, we got this. This is, once it clicks, like this team can go far in the tournament. But we never actually had that moment where we're like, hey, it clicked. There was a missed three pointer, and that's how we won the Big Ten championship. We looked pretty terrible against Indiana. And then we obviously looked like crap against Chattanooga. And so going into the game, we were 4.5 point underdogs to a team that we were seeded higher than. Obviously 1 point, KenPom, Johnny will make a big deal about as well. But it wasn't like we were playing good basketball whatsoever. So like there was like a built-in like expectation that we were not going to win the game compared to the Loyola game. I'm obviously viewing the loss as a failure, but I wasn't like as gutted. Obviously there was other circumstances where I was watching the game in Paris versus watching the game in Illinois, which made me kind of like get over it quicker than I should have.
Oh, poor Josh. Poor Josh.
For me. Sick humble brag there. But I still think like there was still the thought in my mind that we weren't going to win the game going into it, which kind of gives me like a backing, unlike the Loyola game.
Right. I obviously. When we were a one seed, you're a top team in the entire country. The expectation is winning the whole goddamn tournament. Obviously, that in itself is going to change the expectation when your expectation is only to win one more game in the tournament than we did. But look, and I think we will all agree, many people have said this was a flawed team. The entire year, it felt like games that we should have won or barely won or eked out, whether it was a Big Ten play or non-conference play or whatever it may be, like this was a flawed team. It was a flawed team and they couldn't quite put it together. And that's okay to say that. They couldn't quite put it together down the stretch. They showed that against Chattanooga, barely pulling it out. And they certainly showed it against Houston. They lost to the better team. Again, seeding aside, they lost to the objectively the better team we saw how far Houston went. But this was a flawed team that just kind of couldn't find their groove when it mattered most. Still won the Big Ten, but their flaws kind of shined brightest in that round of 32 matchup against Houston. They couldn't put together a full 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was kind of like, to reach our ceiling, we needed a healthy Andre Curbelo, which was what we were all kind of counting on. And he clearly wasn't the same guy that he was a year ago. And you lose Jacob Grandison, who was great entry passer to Kofi, and honestly just one of the best guys you could pair with Kofi because he's such a good three-point shooter. You lose that weapon, then it becomes really difficult. And you just talk about not being able to hit a groove, and it's tough when you just have very little like continuity game to game about who's going to be out there. Like, we think about RJ Melendez was great in February, and then he has the emergency appendix surgery, and then we saw an awesome game at Houston, but he had really only played a couple games before that and sat out maybe three or four games. So it's just not hitting the groove was just such a result of so many things that were almost out of our control. And why you're ultimately, I don't know, less upset and more just sad.
Yeah, whenever Vegas tells you you're a 4.5-point underdog, like, you can only be so shocked. And I think, like, Andre Cabrera being benched the second half was kind of, we talked about before in the podcast, like, we probably need Andre to hit his stride in the tournament, and him being benched the second half and not playing well was kind of like that realization that, like, it, we just didn't get to where we needed to be in time.
Yep. And that was, that game itself was confusing too, because you're playing from behind the entire time and Trent hits that buzzer beater three. So like, we finally cut it to four. And I mean, it was weird being in there. Any tournament game is kind of weird because the environment is split between Illinois fans and Houston fans. And not only that, it's, you got Villanova and Ohio State fans who are there for the next session. And it just, it doesn't feel like it feels so neutral, not like a Missouri-Illinois bragging rights games where it's like half and half. It's like a quarter and a quarter. So sometimes it's hard to for guys to really like get their energy that they typically derive from a crowd, I guess, even in a road game, because you're like, yeah, I'm feeding off of all of the cheers for the other team or the boos. So it was just, we didn't really get into a rhythm. And Maddie said it 100 times, we were playing unsustainable. We couldn't really get rebounds. They were offensive rebounding like crazy. And then once we kind of maybe figured that out, it was Houston just making every bucket in the half court to kind of end the game. So it was just, it was a frustrating game to watch too.
So frustrating. I think I said this is unsustainable to the people that I was watching around maybe 40 times, right? Like, that 4-point halftime deficit felt like you had just run a marathon or something, right? It was like so exhausting. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, it's 4 points, but if this same style of play continues to any extent in the second half, it's just not possible. You know, equating your field goals with offensive rebounds given up well into the second half is not a recipe for winning basketball. And it was just, it was a different kind of loss than Loyola loss, yes, but it was just a slow and painful death in that same sense. And it was just a bummer to watch, absolute bummer to watch. But yes, not nearly as bad as the Loyola loss last year, but we were one win away from your goals. So it hurts.
Definitely would have hurt. Just like it would have hurt RJ if he let go of his dunk, like when the refs wanted him to let go.
Rule 69, you must die dunking the basketball. Yes, I think the best part of that was how the ref like admitted that he shouldn't have called that. Like, can you just be like, hey, we're not shooting a free throw here. I don't know. I guess I don't know. But there was in the North Carolina game that night, or the Baylor game, game that night, the dude hung on the rim and like grabbed it and moved back on the rim, shook it. Like, and the NCAA,
yeah, the TCU March guy, Madness, TCU guy.
Yeah. TCU had the audacity to tweet that out. Like, what, sir? But that, you know, irrelevant now.
We were outplayed. That had a small impact. It was on our comeback, but we lost the rest of the game by like what, 17 points. So it's not like
irrelevant, but just frustrating to see.
Yeah.
Just almost laughing at it now. Go ahead, Johnny.
Great to see RJ step up though. Like, that was really encouraging. Him and Luke, probably the two bright spots of the game, other than your classic 19-8 from Kofi. Like, like to see the confidence from them, and really hope they can build off of that, because you're looking at guy like, everyone saw those per 40 minutes from Melendez comparing to Jaden Ivey. It's like, he could really take a leap.
Yeah.
And they're comparing him to Jaden Ivey. That's not good.
No,
any expectations, because that's just nearly impossible to be a lottery pick and an All-American.
To score 9 points against St. Peter's.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. Yes. But
no one wants to point out the flaw in Johnny's tweet there.
Yes. But hopefully we can get just a really solid kind of season from them. But
wait, no,
it's sometimes hard.
I was thinking about this. Let's forget freshman on Michigan. current freshmen at Michigan that are going to be sophomores, and forget potentially Malachi Branham. What other freshman is Malachi. There that who would Malachi. Be like? What did I say? Oh, Malachi. what other freshman would there be? That's tough. That's a tough one. All right. What other freshman like are is that exciting in the Big Ten? That's going to make the Jonathan Davis, Keegan Murray, Jaden Ivey jump. I made sure to say
Luke Goody, Brandon Pajimski.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, the portal, though, kind of like Michigan will find for the third year in a row some fifth-year point guard to just fill the gap.
Yeah.
I guess if Christie stays or if
– Right.
There were two really good power forwards on Purdue, actually, Caleb First and Trey Kaufman, so maybe them. But in terms of, like, wings, probably RJ. Like, Chucky Hepburn's probably going to be good, but RJ is definitely, like, a sleeper pick for all Big Ten. But
I know
you
need
to be consistent. You need to be consistent. And even, there's a huge difference. Even
sophomore slumps.
And even being like a third team all Big Ten guy and being what Jaden Ivey was, it's just hard to compare.
Yeah, there's this like guy on Iowa that's some Iowa beat writer might say if he doesn't go pro, like Chris Murray.
Oh
but
my God.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Murray honestly had a better season than Keegan did this year or last year. So
like, no, this year.
You can. No, I'm saying like Keegan last year, Big Ten freshman.
Yeah.
But like Chris this year was better than Keegan last year. So like if they make similar leaps, like I don't want to see that, but it might happen.
All right. Well, fun Final Four that we have. A lot of no name.
Fun
teams.
Final Four. Someone's gonna, you know, add another banner to their rafters of many, many banners. Anything else here?
I think we should talk about
head into the
four,
off season.
Because I do have a couple questions for you guys. One is like we had tweeted out, okay, rankings on possible Final Four winners, which was, I think, one Meteor, two cancel the tournament because of COVID, three.
Which, boo. So,
yeah, like, hopefully two happen.
That's terrible.
I mean, I'm happy with not awarding a champion, but like, guys, it's a serious issue. We should probably consider it. Social distancing is important. But three Villanova, four Duke, five Kansas, six UNC. I think what was interesting to me in terms of some of the replies were it really depends on like when you became an Illini fan, because a lot of people maybe recently really hate Duke. For me, who was a fan in 2005, like I have PTSD from North Carolina and will always hate that school. I honestly hate UNC more than Missouri in terms of non-conference opponents, because as a 8-year-old kid, I was like crying and just still haven't gotten over that loss either. So hate UNC, obviously Kansas, don't like them because of Bill Self, and then Duke and Villanova, don't really like either of those teams. But
the one reply that just bottled my mind was like someone defending Bill Self. Like, we should like Bill Self. What? Yeah. What? Are you kidding me? I know he brought the players, but like, no.
Yeah. I mean, like, you should maybe in certain contexts, like, yeah, he like left Illinois in a better place than when he got there. But at the same time, like, the dude had so much success at Illinois. You could have stayed there and been like, you could have taken that team that went to the national championship, potentially won a championship. But I mean, I don't 100% blame him. I don't blame him for taking one of the four best jobs in college basketball. But at the same time, it's like you had everything right there and you had said, like, Illinois is the job for me.
Johnny, he is in our intro too.
I think Johnny knows my recruiting base budget. I think Johnny knows my Bill Self take, which is like they barely won one. They needed Mario Chalmers. Granted, Memphis may or may not have cheated, but they needed a Mario Chalmers like last second three to get to overtime to win one national championship game. Whereas like Bill Self could have stayed and had a chance to win one at Illinois. Like, plus he was named in all this FBI stuff. I think Bill Self has like done the absolute bare minimum someone could possibly do. I just like hate the Bill Self as a great coach take. I think he like literally could not have done any less at Kansas without getting fired.
He's how many Big 12 titles? Okay.
Yeah,
he's a very good player. Like, I'm not denying
double-digit Big 12 titles. Yeah.
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying I don't think he's like
in college basketball.
I'm not denying he's a very good coach. I just don't think he's like I think Jay Wright winning three titles at Villanova versus what Bill Self has done at Kansas is just a different level.
So Nova's winning it all this year, you're saying?
I would be okay with that.
I mean, it's so hard to win in college. Like, again, the tournament, it's hard to win it all. Like, he's got a billion Big 12 titles. He is an elite coach.
Yeah. I mean, he's got four Final Fours there in 20 years. Like, that's pretty damn good.
That's almost really less than good.
20 years. And the year that COVID went down, I think they were the number one team in the nation. And I think, like, you, Josh and I were talking about this, especially in terms of Villanova, but, like, the roster construction that they have where they're just able to get 3- and 4-year guys who are, I don't know, top 30 guys to stay, it's really impressive at Villanova. But Kansas kind of does the same thing where it's, like, Akbaji, McCormick.
Lightfoot.
Those guys are all vets, and they were on, some of them were on the team in 2018 or 2020. Like, they continue to reload and get guys to stay versus like the Dukes and the UNCs have a lot more one and done talent. So, like, I definitely respect the talent accumulation and roster building that those two coaches are able to do.
Sorry, just I want to put a bow on the Crivella talk and wrap up this podcast, but there's a fine. Isaac Trotter just released an article of destinations you could see Andre Curbelo at, and there's two Big Ten programs on it, and I swear, I'm going to be so jealous and upset.
Please don't say Michigan.
Ohio State is obviously one of them, as we've discussed with the Zed Key connection, and the other one would be Purdue.
Rutgers? Oh, Purdue. Oh, God, no. Please, no.
Yeah, no, The other options were obviously you got to look at assistant coaches. So Gonzaga with Gentry,
Kentucky,
and Kentucky with Antigua. Obviously, Miami and St. John's make sense, but they were all high level. There was no other mid major. It was just a tough look.
Yeah.
Well, no, good for Curbelo.
Yes,
I want him to go to a high major.
I do.
At Purdue, maybe not. Ohio State, maybe not. But dude, go get your bag. Like, go do your thing. I'm not saying go to Quinnipiac. Like, no, go play high D1 basketball where you can and will play.
Yeah, no, 100%. We tweeted through it. We potted through it. And now I'm just at jealousy. The different stages here.
The different stages of a podcast fans, you know. Were you even in denial? I mean, there was denial, wasn't there?
Bargaining, no, denial happened maybe? When people started like saying before he announced it. Like, no, he's going to stay.
Yeah.
Right. Well.
It is interesting. Go ahead, Johnny. Too, though, going back to the Final Four for a hot sec, which is like, seems like everyone's aligned. Villanova is the most palatable team for us to root for. You could make the argument that they have impacted Illinois the most compared to those three other teams in the last 5 years. Essentially, we were the second choice for Jalen Brunson. And if Villanova didn't exist, like, imagine how different the last 5 years might have looked like. So it's like, that's how frustrating the Final Four is, that like we're essentially rooting for the team that stole Jalen Brunson from us.
Ran lots of suicides because of that one. That was a tough one. Oof. Well, another college basketball season is coming to an end here. Another season of the Boardroom is coming to an end. So, hey, good job, guys, potting our way through another season of Illinois basketball. The season might be over, but we are certainly not done. We'll definitely have a couple episodes this off season, and you better believe that we will be back and better than ever next year for season 3 of the Boardroom. But if you're still listening, you are an OG. Thank you so much for kind of listening and supporting us this year. If you do want to support us again, if you want to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, if you want to support the Boardroom in any way possible by subscribing to Robert's site, the Illini board, or supporting us with our merch, we would of course be so grateful. But I think we're all extremely grateful for having this platform and getting to talk about our true love, Illinois basketball. And I don't think any of us took that for granted this year at all. But thanks so much, everyone, for listening to us talk this year about Illinois basketball. We will catch you on the next episode. ILL.